The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this gorgeous Monday afternoon, April 20th, 2026. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is the Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us again on a beautiful spring Monday afternoon here in the Auburn Opelika area. I thought we were doomed. I thought it was gone, and I thought it was never coming back. But we have not hit 90 degrees yet, so we should be okay. And we have so much to talk about on today's show. Breaking news out of the college basketball world for Auburn. A-Day is done. Spring is done. Baseball nowhere near done. And all sorts of things to get to on the program today. Christian, Monday? Happy Monday? Victory Monday? What kind of Monday are we feeling
today? We're having a damn good Monday. That's the kind of Monday we're having here on the show. It's pretty solid. I mean, you mentioned the weather. I forgot the word spring existed.
I know.
It's usually, I mean, you have like 2 days of it, but now you're at the point of, gosh, what would you give for this to be like, man, it's hot in Auburn today? I'd give a lot.
I mean, I wonder what place in the United States the summer feels like this. Is that a real thing? Because it's currently, I don't know, it says it's 76 outside, but it doesn't feel like 76. 74, whatever. I mean, dude, I would take this all day. You kidding me?
Coastal Southern California, parts of Hawaii, and high-altitude locations like Lake Tahoe and Breckenridge, according to the...
Oh, dude, Breckenridge is awesome. It's out in Colorado. You ever been there?
Never been there, no.
Oh, it's one of the big ski snowboarding resorts out there. It is awesome. It's like the resort to go to in Colorado.
Man.
Yeah. I'm good on California. Yeah. I will go to Hawaii, though. I could handle
Santa
that.
Barbara is apparently has been recognized as having the best climate in the country, where the best weather averages around 75 degrees all year round.
That's okay.
You still need, like, the negative 30 where you walk out and can't feel any part of your body.
Yeah, I still need some cold every now and then. Man. Yeah.
But if today was the biggest complaint you had, then my goodness, it's a pretty good Monday.
Yeah.
Here on the show, you mentioned it, we are hitting all three major sports, and we're doing so for 30 minutes. We got 30 minutes of baseball, we got 30 minutes of football, we got 30 minutes of basketball, and my goodness, you close your eyes and throw it a dartboard and pick where you want to start today.
Brad Law says that San Diego is magnificent.
There we go.
So maybe
How far is San Diego from Santa Barbara?
I don't know. So maybe the weather out there is fine. And I will admit, I'm talking bad about a place that I've never been.
Sure.
So, been to
Washington. I'm sure it feels better than Gainesville, Florida. I can promise you that.
I don't know. I think Brad and the Auburn baseball are feeling pretty good coming out of Gainesville, Florida.
They should, but the actual place itself maybe not too hot or way too hot, depending on the person, the team, or the player that you ask. I mean, Mason McCrane couldn't be hotter leaving Gainesville, Florida. And so, if that's the biggest complaint, my goodness, what a fabulous show that we have set up for everybody here this afternoon. And again, you can pick and choose where you want to start. I'll throw it to you, partner.
Yeah, I mean, we have, again, wrapping and kind of recapping A-Day, putting a bow on the spring for Auburn football. Then we are going to talk about that baseball series from down in Gainesville, where Auburn goes in and not just does what it's supposed to do, they went above and beyond and took the series from Florida, where their RPI has skyrocketed because of it. And then, yes, there is a ton of news for Auburn basketball. And we pretty much have 30 minutes slated for each major sport. Then, then our guy Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network will join us at 3:30 to recap all of that and then some as well. So that is on the docket for today. Up until Jacob Hillman, though, at 3:30. Phone lines are open. Your thoughts on any of it, whether it's the sport we're talking about, you want to hit another sport, well, you're fine to do that as well. That's the cool thing about what we do is we'll talk about anything you want to talk about. So give us a call, 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. Or you could shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067.
And putting a bow on our geography lesson, doubling down on what Brad said, and informing our guy Ben Taylor, who's listening and learning more about the west side of the United States than he ever knew of before. We went to San Diego for Christmas a couple of years ago. And
so you have been out there?
I have. We went there just a couple of, not to Santa Barbara or any place like that, but we went to like La Jolla and San Diego for, that was our big Christmas gift. And it was 75 degrees and I was in a hoodie and sweatpants and it felt like there was something wrong with either me or just the world, because as soon as it hits 50, you can't be wearing both of those here.
Yeah. Well, Brad said it was 346 degrees in Gainesville this weekend.
Yeah. I don't doubt that whatsoever.
Yeah.
That was not even including the on-field temperature. That was just the actual.
God, I can only imagine. Well, the on-field temperature Saturday inside of Jordan-Hare was actually quite warm down there in the field-level conditions on Saturday afternoon. But we got to be there and watch it and cover it. And just like that, spring practice has come to an end for Auburn football. And the excitement of the spring has come and gone. The excitement of A-Day, solid turnout, and you almost nailed the attendance number. So congrats. You'll be in the record books forever, Christian, to I guess, since you were, what, like 100 people off?
I think I said
how
I was,
many people were there?
Yeah, 105 people. I think I guessed 34,100-something, and they said it was like 34,226.
Yeah, you weren't far off, so yeah, you'll be in the record book forever there. But it seems like there's a portion of the fan base that is relatively happy about what they saw at A-Day. There's a portion of the fan base that's like, I don't know. There's a portion that's like, oh no, here we go again. Where do you stand? Spring is over. A-Day's come and gone. We're into not necessarily the summer workouts yet, but recruiting season, then summer workouts, then fall practice. Your takeaways from the spring and then particularly A-Day on Saturday.
Yeah, as a team, as a whole, I will happily fall into the category of, yeah, all right, cool. Spring is done. You answered the questions that needed to be answered. You, as Coach Golish has said multiple times, even acknowledging that the word is overused, but saying that the culture has been built, figuring out and teaching these guys how to practice, the mentality that you enter for the week, what you need to accomplish each and every day. Those are some of the biggest things that you highlight with a first-year head coach and being able to get guys bought into that. You have not heard anything negative on that side of things. I love the energy that we've gone out there and seen the team practice with multiple times, the way that the coaches are intentional, not only as different sides of the ball, but in their position groups specifically, and the verbiage, some ones that we can't say on the radio, but just the knowledge that these coaches coach with and how it seems intentional. And it is very much based on, yes, a position group, but the ability to pull a player aside and be able to talk with him while the other guys are going through their reps. That is a big thing for me. We've talked about it because with the first little half of our media windows that we get, it's all of the players going through their stretching lines, going through basically their pre-practice warm-ups, and you see every single coach, even if it's your position group or not, walk up and hit every single player on the helmet, every single player on the butt, tell them good morning, tell them they're happy that they're there. And I think, man, you talk about building an environment that people want to be around, and an environment that people enjoy going to practice and knowing that, man, you're going to get the all from me because I'm going to get your all towards me as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a very, very big thing to build off of. And whether that is having any conversation of depth chart or not, which I don't think there should be, except for maybe certain positions of guys returning. I don't think there's any questions whether or not Xavier Atkins is going to be a starting linebacker. Conversations like that.
Sure.
Yet that being said, that room is pretty dang good as well. But those were the biggest question marks that I had to check off, and so far I would say that every single one of them has. In terms of A-Day, I think we saw very good. I think we saw struggles a little bit as well. Coach Golish talked about the nerves of, man, these guys are honestly going out and practicing an A-Day game in front of more fans that they played in front of on Saturdays.
For a lot of the South Florida guys.
Right, yeah. Right. And so being able to have fan noise to where Cole's snaps were a little bit left or right or not necessarily on target. He said it's good for him. That was a big thing that Golish used in the post-game interviews. Was he said, man, he needed that. We needed that. And I think that's a big thing moving forward. You saw, based off of statistics and based off of just kind of what you saw with the freedom of the offense, one quarterback may have looked a little bit better than the other. I don't know if that was necessarily by design or not, based off of snaps, based off of reps, but things that you can work on. And man, this defense is very, very exciting yet again, which people can take that as a, oh man, that means the offense is just that bad again, which I by no means fall into that camp. But I think there is a whole lot of excitement when you look at this team as a whole and how excited I am to see what Golish and this staff is able to do over the summer when they get these guys back of, okay, now we hit the ground running. Now the foundation has been built. It's go time every single time.
Well, there were several guys that we talked to after the A-Day game, players, and I was asking them the question of, okay, now that spring is over, what are your goals between now and fall practice? And several of them said, get bigger. They said they wanted to get bigger. They wanted to get faster. They wanted to get stronger. They wanted to improve their bodies. And a lot of them were South Florida guys or transfers who were coming in to play against SEC-level talent on both sides of the football. And so I think that's really, really cool. And, yeah, man, that DJ Durkin defense, it hasn't missed a beat.
No. And we talked a lot about that on Saturday because, again, it was a lot of offense stood on one side of the sideline, defense stood on the other side. And it's hard for me to find better days, or it's hard for me to predict a better day. And we both talked a lot about this, of there's nobody that's happier in the world right now than DJ Durkin. Being able to be the guy on that side of the football and that sideline, just with your guys after takeaways, seeing the entire defensive staff lose its mind, them bringing the football to Dirk. It's really, really exciting. And my goodness, the freedom that he allows his guys to play with, and we'll dive into this the more we go along, of, okay, it looks like this guy may have been a little bit out of position, but he sensed something, and all of a sudden he's in the right play, and he comes away with the fumble. He comes away with the interception. So not only Golish, or not only Durkin, rather, putting the guys in the right position to be successful, but having it to where you allow a little bit of freedom. You let these guys go and be just true athletes, and I think that is what is really, really exciting when you talk to the individual that's on the sideline or one of those 11 guys that's on the field at any time.
Someone texted us in the text box, 334-784-1067, says that Del Mar, California, is far superior to Santa Barbara. So, in case you were wondering, there's your expertise analysis on five different cities in the state of California. So, let's get to the phone lines for the first time today. They are open, 334-321-1390. We get to it now. John in Auburn, your thoughts from A-Day this Saturday, my friend.
Hey, guys. Happy Monday. With A-Day, so if I recall, I may have my years out, but 3 years ago, I think Auburn had a Biletnikoff, a future Biletnikoff shine at A-Day, and everybody was singing his praises, and it was Shane Hollywood Hooks. And that didn't pan out well following, like, an impressive spring performance and all the videos and all from Auburn Athletics. If that's true, it's hard, it seems like, for our fan base to accept that the inverse can be true.
Sure.
That poor performances in the spring can pay off down the road. And I'll leave you with one other thought. In 2013, Malzahn's first year at Auburn, he had a four-way quarterback race that obviously Nick Marshall won. But because it's difficult to evaluate a running quarterback in practice, Malzahn, even in the fall, had those quarterbacks live in practice and taking hits. And it's very hard with these big mobile quarterbacks to evaluate in non-contact or touch situations. Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, appreciate the call, John. Got a lot of great points that we are going to continue here in this 30 minutes talking football, because there were several instances on Saturday, and this is obviously the quarterbacks is the position that everybody is there to see, the one to analyze, overanalyze, good or for bad. And when it came to Byron Brown, because statistically, and these are loose stats, these are stats with an asterisk, okay, because of the scoring system and because of how the game was being played and how it was officiated and things like that, right? Tristan Tia's numbers were twice as good as Byron Brown's were, right? And Byron Brown had several, I can count four or five on the top of my head, plays where if this was a live game, I would expect him to get out and make a play with his legs. Now, there were also several where they blew it dead and they didn't give a sack or whatever to the defense, where I don't think he gets away when there's a linebacker on his heels who would have jumped on his back like a bear, okay? But I do believe, and I agree with John, it is hard in that A-Day scenario for fans to get a true read, and maybe for the coaches too, but they're there day in and day out. They know what Byron Brown can do, especially Alex Golish, who has seen him play in live action G5 football.
Not only G5 football, but in major power games as well, where you pulled off the upset in Gainesville last year. You almost got it against Alabama twice. I mean, that's why there was no concern whatsoever when talking with Coach Golish, and he was the first to admit that, yeah, Byron didn't really see the field great today. Yet that being said,
I appreciated the honesty
very much so.
There.
Rather than trying to figure out and formulate
and
some sort
it.
Of answer,
yeah.
Golish, I think we have realized, is not that kind of guy, which is why a lot of Auburn fans are fired up that he's going to be the head coach, from the standpoint of not taking you-know-what from other fan bases or other coaches or whatever the case may be. But he's not somebody to try and put a spin on what is not there, and said, yeah, Byron didn't really see the field great today. A lot of that was just because of different pressures that he hadn't really seen that Golish decided to bring. And then again, a lot of that was just because of the freedom being restricted, right? You look at Byron's numbers, and he had 7 carries for 6 yards. I promise you that is not accurate in a real game, because if you have one-on-one and basically an Oklahoma type of drill, yet you have the entire football field to work with, and it's this guy, and it's an outside linebacker, and Byron can go 5 yards in either direction, I promise you he's breaking that tackle, and he's going 20 or 30 more yards, which is what you would have seen 2 or 3 times with the pocket collapsing and either evading it left and right or just going up and finding a hole up the middle. John, I'm also disappointed you didn't have a question about Walt Weiss and the Braves sweeping the Phillies, but I guess we'll
aren't any good.
We'll figure that out. NL East looks incredible right now.
Incredibly bad.
Depending on how you look at it, I think it looks pretty dang good right now. But the freedoms being restricted dampens so much of a true player's talents, and the quarterback position meaning so much now. As much as you would love to see Byron Brown come out in a no-contact jersey, which he did in the beginning, and we figured out the reason why he had that blue jersey on before the scrimmage got started, but there was, okay, holy cow, are we at the point of, we're going to let this guy go? We're going to let this guy take a couple of hits, and then he ran back out of the tunnel and was like, okay, now we understand. But that limits so much of what he wants to do. It limits so much of his game and how he's so effective. And I think that has a little bit of a say on why his stat line may have looked the way that it did.
Now, the quarterbacks in general did throw a couple of interceptions, did have a couple of bad throws. Receivers had a couple of drops. And the defense looked pretty solid. I think the run game looked pretty solid. I think we learned a lot more about what the rotation could be. Golish had interesting comments about the running backs as well, and I'm going to keep talking about that when we come back. We're talking Auburn A-Day. We'll talk Auburn baseball, Auburn basketball, too. We understand there's a lot of news, and we have only 2 hours to get to it, so we're going to do our best to do so. We'll take a break. We'll come back, continue talking Auburn A-Day right after this, as we're just underway here on the Monday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, talking more Auburn football from A-Day this past weekend. And we were talking quarterbacks there on the way out and want to pick back up there. I want to talk to running backs a little bit as well. And the man, the defensive ends for Auburn are just ridiculous. And, you know, with the quarterbacks, there are people who are obviously concerned because they threw, what, four, I think, total interceptions on A-Day. And a couple of them were not great throws. One of them was just an unbelievable play by Jared Smith, who is one of those defensive ends that's just going to get after the football no matter what he does.
Who won defensive MVP?
As he should. But I don't think it is that big of a deal. What I do think is a big deal, and something that Golish talked about, and we actually had a chance to talk to this young man afterwards, Tristan Tia can sling the football. Golish talked about he needs to be a little bit more accurate, needs to kind of grow up a little bit, not in a bad maturity way, just
he's a redshirt freshman.
Yeah, just get comfortable with where you are going up against SEC-level competition. But, man, the football out of his hands, it looks better than anybody on the team.
I mean, he can spin it. That was the mindset going into it is, holy cow, this dude can move around the pocket. He's very elusive. He's something that a lot of people refer to as a wide receiver room or a smaller running back as slippery. You feel like Tia has that sort of mindset and that sort of nature with the football in his hands. But, yeah, his ability to spin the football and to put it where receivers are going to be, that was something the entire offense did really well on their completions is, man, put the ball where the receiver is going to be. Mm-hmm. The slants that, like, holy cow, they caught in front of them and were able to either dive forward or take another step or two before getting tackled. Like, slant routes, baby. It's pretty cool, you know, like that football term that's used with receivers where, like, a lot of teams run it on, like, third and short and, you know, pick up first downs. We had those. We had a tight end screen the first play of the game.
Yep.
And it was like, what?
Yeah.
Everybody in the whole
would have
press
lost
box,
that bet. Yeah.
Yeah. Plus 13,000 odds for, Jake Johnson to
catch a
not even a bubble
screen,
but one of those like fake ones out to the hash and you dump it over the middle. It was pretty cool. Picked up 7 yards, made it 2nd and 3, ran the ball at the middle, first down with Jeremiah Cobb. And it was like, holy cow. Just like that, you're at the 38-yard line. Mm. Pretty sweet to see. You got to shout out Deshaun Spencer as well, who won offensive MVP. Many are calling him the best receiver to ever come out of Saraland. You can do that with what you will. Maybe even the best receiver out of Saraland in the SEC. I don't know. That's just what people are saying for Spencer. And he was one of the guys that talked about, I need to put on some weight. But my goodness, how many of these dudes that we talked to yesterday or out on Saturday, just giddy, just so excited.
Yeah.
Joe Phillips was one of those guys that stole the entire press box. I mean, was not in a bad way, but just louder than everybody because a lot of the guys were a little bit more to themselves, and he was sitting there just talking about how awesome it was being able to go out and practice and hit somebody else and protect people. And it was really, really cool to see a lot of the personalities of these guys. But again, all, wrapping this back to Tristan Tia, yes, his ability to spin the football and get out of the pocket when needed did make the one bad decision with the cornerback dropping back from covering the guy in the flat to kind of just sinking back and getting that little flag route about 12, 15 yards down the field. But 15 of 20, 179, a touchdown interception as well. Also had a rushing touchdown. There's a lot to be excited about, and how nice is it to have multiple quarterbacks that you feel like could step in and do a job, and there's not going to be a complete downfall of either A, the offense, or B, the offensive game plan.
Yeah, and in conjunction with that, the running backs, we saw the A-Day rotation of Jeremiah Cobb, Omar Mapson. Then you saw Davenport and Washington. Davenport and then Washington. And I asked Golish about that in the presser, and just takeaways from what he saw in the spring, what he saw on A-Day and things. I mean, Jeremiah Cobb is it. There's no doubt about it. He said Omar continues to get better. I think Omar looks bigger. I think he runs better than most of those guys do. Davenport was surprisingly, what's the word? Not good or talented. We knew that, but I don't know the best way to describe Davenport. I mean, he was a surprise to me.
It's one of those guys that this gap has dropped a lot with the transfer portal and just with the talent of college football. But in spring, you could almost see sometimes that, okay, he looked good, but how is that game going to translate to the SEC? He didn't feel out of place whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, he looked like he belonged.
Yes.
And then, you know, we had been talking with guys in the press box, and it was like, okay, Washington looks a step slow, not falling forward like an Omar does or Jeremiah Cobb does and things like that. And Golish even said, he's like, yeah, he's got to get back in football shape because
got him a couple weeks ago after the transfer portal process and said, yeah, from one chubby butt to another, you got to lose a little bit of weight, get back in football shape.
Yeah, and I think once he does, you'll have four legitimate dudes that you can rely on any down, any distance, any time.
I think Jeremiah Cobb obviously is going to be the main back. I think Nakai Davenport is going to be the old school Jeremiah Cobb, a little bit more outside the tackles. Omar, just from what we saw, that third down back of, okay, we need a bowling ball to go pick up 3 or 4 yards. And then Bryson Washington, whatever role he can fill as an X-factor back, puts a very, very good problem to be had with a running quarterback and Byron Brown as your offense.
Those are the A-Day thoughts. We'll talk some Auburn baseball right after this as the Tigers take the series in Gainesville.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us as we just wrapped up about 30 minutes of football. Now we got 30 minutes of baseball. Don't you worry. We're going to start hour number two with 30 minutes of basketball with all the breaking news there for Auburn.
Is there news?
Yeah, in case you didn't know, we have Freeman news, so I'll get to that in a little bit. Yes, we will talk basketball to start hour number two, then Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network will be with us at 3:30. So until then, phone lines are open if you want to be a part of the show, 334-321-1390. Call in about football, baseball, basketball, you name it, we'll talk about it. Or you can hit us up in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. But before we get into baseball content, want to let you know and remind you that coming up in June at Jordan-Hare Stadium, the international soccer giant and the current world champion Argentina will be at Jordan-Hare. They'll meet Iceland on Tuesday, June 9th at Jordan-Hare Stadium at 7:30 p.m. The first ever international soccer game to be played in Auburn, and it's Argentina's last game before the World Cup. So, if you want to be there for a historic moment, check out the defending World Cup champions before they go and try to defend that World Cup championship. Tickets are starting for just $45 in Jordan-Hare. You can get tickets on the website at road226.com. R-O-A-D-T-O, the number 2, the number 6.com. Road226 to get your tickets, again, starting at just $45. Road226.com. Auburn baseball goes down to Gainesville and not only does what we say they were supposed to do, according to our buddy Jack Hutton, the Tigers went down and birdied this series in Gainesville this weekend.
I was really hoping you were going to go road to 26 and make the road to Omaha jump straight there.
If I was a better host, I would have.
I was trying to get your attention to go for it, but
no, I suck.
Well, the road back to Plainsman Park.
The road back to Auburn, or the road in the sky back to Auburn, was cool, you know.
It was, man. What a series it was for the Auburn Tigers. You go and you refer to what we have talked about, and that is in the SEC, if you can take one on the road and then you take the series at home, it puts you in a really good spot. Auburn, you mentioned it, after falling in game one, you force the rubber match in game two, and then you have the early start in game three where Florida jumps on you early. A 3-run shot in the first inning. Auburn is hitless in the first couple of innings, to where Butch Thompson, in his live interview, used the word interest and said, if our team wants to be interested in this game, we'll find a way to come back and win. And said that a couple of times, and my goodness, did his team get the memo? Auburn wins the series, something that I have talked about a lot, especially last week on the ability to not only make up a little bit of ground and wins that you feel like you could easily have in SEC play, but when you look at the RPI and you look at the strength of schedule and what Florida has been doing as of late, playing one of the hottest teams in college baseball, going to their place, this was the final team, at least that you were scheduled to play, that had a better RPI than you did. And you go and you take the series, and now Auburn is back into a legitimate conversation. And based off where you look, a top five team, a top eight team, and a lot of places have Plainsman Park not only set to host a regional, set to host a super regional if Auburn's able to advance. Obviously, still a lot of time to be had, but you can only take the steps that are in front of you, and Auburn took a big, big step in game three and throughout the three-game set in Gainesville.
Well, they had to do it in comeback fashion every single time. Auburn in the first three innings this weekend against Florida, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, in the first three innings of the ballgame, gave up four runs, two runs, and three runs. Just in the first three innings, off of your starter.
And that's usually the flip side. Auburn's been the team to score first in just about every single game.
Yeah, and of those four, two, and three, most of those coming off of, you know, major crooked innings. And so Auburn had to fight back every game of this series, came up short in game one, of course, came back and was able to handle business in game two, and then it was late, but Auburn put pedal to the metal and blew it open down the stretch in the rubber match. We got to watch the conclusion of it and listen to the broadcast at the same time in the press box at Jordan-Hare because of the early 11 a.m. Central Time start.
And shout out for those people that made that happen, too, to put it on the Jumbotrons.
Yeah,
it was cool. It was really, really cool to hear and see, because RTV was about 5 seconds ahead of the live Jumbotron feed. And so you'd see Mason McCrane or even Brandon McCrane's double down the right field line, and we'd see it land, and then all of a sudden we'd be able to sit there and watch all of Jordan-Hare erupt as well. So that was really, really cool to see.
Well, when we were walking into Jordan-Hare, we were listening to the game on the way to the stadium. We walked in and heard somebody say in the stands, as it had just happened, that Bub went deep.
Yeah, we thought that maybe Byron Brown had just taken the field for the first time, and that was the little eruption, or Golish was there, and it was like, no, Bub just tied it up.
Which, God, how big, yes, for that game in particular, how big of a swing was that from Bub Terrell? One of your leaders on this team who, no, he's not a super senior by any means, but he's some guy, or he's a guy that has been there, done that, and someone that everybody looks up to and probably had his worst series of the year so far. His SEC numbers are not where they need to be, and he'll be the first one to tell you that. But to be the guy to get it started and hit a bomb like that in a place that is kind of a launch pad, and we saw that this weekend on both sides, but what a swing by one of your leaders to get himself out of a slump, to get Auburn kind of woken up there down the stretch in game three, and the Tigers just let them have it after that.
Auburn is one of three teams in the SEC that has won three straight series. They also have five wins when trailing or being tied in the eighth inning.
That's a big stat. It's a scary stat.
It's scary, but I think it's also a very, very solid stat to show that, my goodness. And even that, there's been multiple games. You think about Texas, that series a couple of times where, my goodness, even when Auburn was down 5-0, it feels like they were threatening in every single home half inning, just couldn't put one across. But in that Saturday night game where it's like, okay, pass the baton, pass the baton, pass the baton, and they fell short a couple of times. How nice was it to see what Auburn was able to do with a five spot in the top of the ninth, and they passed the baton. They did just that and continued to rally. And, man, the McCrane brothers and Mason McCrane, who we unfortunately, I guess I shouldn't say unfortunately now, but for better or for worse, for our high school teams, have called many a games for those two gentlemen, and we know the feeling that Florida felt.
Yes.
So nice to be on the cheering side of what the McCrane brothers were able to do. Mason McCrane just won Freshman of the Week, and my goodness, deservingly so. what a weekend it was. I mean, if he wants to get BP there a couple more games in the Condren Family Ballpark and then make his way back to Plainsman Park. Didn't play great in the early SEC series, and maybe he got mad that his brother was getting playing time and he wasn't. And after a couple of injuries, he stepped back up. And my goodness, you feel like he may have found a little bit of a home in that leadoff spot, if not a home back in right field.
Yeah, I mean, leadoff looked pretty good on him. Three home runs and several RBIs driven in, and somebody who you just felt so confident when he stepped in the box. And, yeah, you mentioned it, SEC Freshman of the Week, now the sixth freshman of the – or sixth – recognition by the Southeastern Conference so far by an Auburn baseball player. Bingaman with co-freshman of the week, Mason McCrane with SEC freshman of the week, Jackson Sanders co-pitcher of the week, Marciano co-pitcher of the week, and Petrovic in co-pitcher of the week. And so that's a big deal, man, for Auburn to continue to get recognized, winning this series against Florida, losing 6-3 on Thursday, winning 5-3 on Friday, and winning 8-5 on Saturday in the rubber match has put Auburn in position to be in position in the SEC, and you mentioned the RPI as well.
We did. We'll dive into a little bit more of that here, and on the other side of this, on the other side of the break, when we're talking about the SEC schedule or the standings, rather, when you're looking at the entire league, but you can use a lot of what Coach Golish used in terms of his football team with this baseball team as well, and how he is forcing a lot of his guys to grow up a little bit quicker than they probably should, but because that's just what you have to do in today's day and age of college football and just college athletics. Of, man, there's no more of the getting your feet wet and hoping to have a little bit of success here, a little bit of success there, and then when your junior year gets, that's when you're expected to have a little bit of playing time, so that way when you're a senior, you're ready. You're at the point now of freshmen not only wanting to compete, but a lot of teams needing freshmen to compete and needing them to make an impact day one as soon as they step on your football field. When you look at baseball this same way, with how dang young this team is. You've had some of those growing pains with Coach Butch Thompson, and he talked about it. Again, we had that luncheon with him and said that, yeah, this team hasn't really faced a whole lot of adversity yet, and I'm nervous to see how they will respond once they get punched in the mouth. Once they get knocked to the floor, are they going to be able to stand back up and continue to fight? You saw a little bit of that struggle in SEC play, but now I think you've seen a little bit of the bounce back, not only individually, but as a team as well. Again, you've won three straight series, and you just won a series that not many people had you winning.
Yeah, no doubt. And again, you did more than what you are technically supposed to do when you go on the road. And now Auburn will wrap up this four-game road stretch when they go up to Hoover tomorrow to take on Samford. They play at the Hoover Met, which, for those who don't know why they're playing that game, Butch Thompson and Auburn baseball, they do it every year. They go and play one game late in the season at the Hoover Met. Why? That's where the SEC tournament is held. Get in there, see everything, get a lay of the land, figure out just the depth perception and everything that comes with playing in a new ballpark. Then they come home for Oklahoma Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
And the reason that is so important, you mentioned it, because of the dimensions, the warning track, knowing how many steps you have, knowing, okay, this is where we stand, this is how many steps you have just to get to the wall, this is how many steps you have, this is the foul ground, this is how big the backstop is, this is the batter's eye, all of those things, yes, but when you look at the conglomerate and just the not only speed bump but the roadblock that is in the SEC when you look towards standings right now, we talk about SEC basketball and the postseason tournaments in Nashville not really meaning a lot. The one in Hoover is actually quite the opposite, and it actually does usually mean a whole lot. And in this season, more than others, my goodness, what winning one or two or three could possibly mean to your seed line if you are wanting to be a national seed, or if you are one of the top two seeds and you're wanting now to get into the top 16 to host at least a regional. I mean, those first 2 days in Hoover are going to be really, really fun to watch just from the standpoint of how many of these teams know where they're at, how many of these teams need a couple of wins, who throws for each team, And then again, I mean, it's just cannibalistic in the SEC, and you wouldn't really expect anything different in Hoover. And so the fact that Auburn now gets that one game advantage feels like it makes them a little bit more comfortable.
Failed to mention that this win in Gainesville for Auburn baseball was the first time they've done that since 2013. Right-hand salute. Mr. President, hello, thank you, sir. He has texted in at 334-784-1067, reminding us of that Auburn did, in fact, win in Gainesville for the first time in 2013. Says Auburn picking up important landmarks this year. That one, this was the first sweep of Kentucky in baseball since 2003.
And Arkansas as well, right?
The first series win against Arkansas since 2017.
Yeah.
So making history three separate times in the same season in three series in a row. Pretty impressive stuff.
It's pretty sweet. You seen the video of Alfred Şengün last night or a couple of nights ago when LeBron walked in for shoot-arounds?
Yeah.
Şengün was the only person on the bench, and he was sitting there like fixing his socks, putting his earbuds in. LeBron walked in, and everybody stood up.
Yep.
That's how we are with President Eric.
Yeah, we stand up in the studio. You just can't see it. We stand up and salute.
King James, King Eric.
King Eric. There's probably a King Eric in the history book somewhere, right?
I'd imagine so.
Surely there is.
He resides in Auburn, Alabama.
There's one in our history books. That's right. Well, Auburn gets a series win over Florida. Again, dropping the game on Thursday, coming back and winning Friday and on Saturday. Has put the Tigers in position to be in position. We'll talk about the other SEC series, the SEC standings as well, and where we are as we head down the backstretch of SEC play. We'll wrap up hour number one with that conversation right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrap it up, hour number one here on ESPN 106.7, talking Auburn baseball. Zooming out, talking a little SEC baseball, too, because the logjam that is the SEC baseball standings is remarkable to see. Georgia now 13-5 on the year in SEC play. Texas A&M 12-5 in SEC play. Texas 11-6. And then there it is. There is the, I don't know, whatever word you want to use, of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Oh, sorry.
What'd you say?
10 total, I would say, in that log jam.
Yeah. But five teams are at 10-8. The other five, well, 3 are 9-9, 2 are 8-10. The five teams at 10-8, Mississippi State, Ole Miss, Auburn, Oklahoma, and Florida. The two teams at 9-9, three teams at 9-9 are Alabama, Arkansas, and Vanderbilt, and then Kentucky and Tennessee. After that, you've got LSU at 6-12, who has been very disappointing this season, and then South Carolina and Missouri are terrible. So
LSU, shockingly enough, has a lot of the updated seed lines are listed as one of the first four teams out, which is something that you the next four out, Tennessee in a lot of them, is the one of the first teams out. Something you don't expect from those two programs.
Auburn, of course, beat Florida 2-1 this weekend. Georgia beat Arkansas 2-1. Vanderbilt beat. That was the drunkest third game I've ever seen in my life.
It's a football score.
That's a bad football score. Like, that is unbelievable what that was. Vanderbilt beat Kentucky 2-1. Ole Miss took the series against Tennessee 2-1. State swept South Carolina. A&M swept LSU. Oklahoma swept Missouri. And then Texas took 2 games against 1-2 Alabama.
And talking about the Auburn-Florida series and how important it was, not only just to win a series, but to win a series against one of the teams playing its best baseball in all of college baseball right now. When you look at where Auburn was and where Auburn now is, Florida was the only team higher in RPI that Auburn hadn't played yet. And so that is where that biggest jump was. Obviously, you continue to win, and the other teams that you beat continue to win. That obviously boosts the RPI as well. But Florida was anywhere from 4-6 in RPI. I believe they were right at number 5, according to NCAA RPI. And so if Auburn could have taken that series, man, what it would mean for the Auburn Tigers. You now look at it right now after taking the series, Auburn goes from 10th to 5th.
Yeah.
That's a big jump in the RPI. It's one thing to go from 46th to 41st, where those numbers are a little bit more spaced out. It's a lot more difficult to make any sort of jump in the top 15 or top 20, but to jump five spots because of that series win and because of that ninth inning that you had at Gainesville or at Florida in Gainesville goes to show you how crucial of a series it was. And Auburn was able to answer the call because the only teams in front of them right now in RPI, UCLA is number one. UCLA might be the number one unanimous overall seed if the season ended right now, or even if it didn't, you can go ahead and call it what they are. 36-3, they are incredible. You have Texas at number two, Georgia Tech at number three, Alabama's at number four, and Auburn at number five. And so the RPI continuing to be more and more in favor of Auburn, and the reason that that is so crucial because even after Auburn didn't finish atop the SEC last year, their RPI was the reason that they were able to make such a big jump in the national seed. They're in a spot right now to where it could be a very similar story, yet that being said, there's still a lot more SEC play to be played, which is could go either way, I guess, but based off of how Auburn is playing, you feel like that's continuing to trend upward, and being able to be back at home this weekend is that much bigger.
Well, coming off of two upsetting series and depressing series against Texas and Alabama, you've since turned it around and won three straight series, as you mentioned, which puts Auburn in position, if you do what you're supposed to do, win two games at home and a game on the road, put you in a spot to be 16-14 in SEC play.
Looking at the college baseball bracketology, according to, I believe it was College Baseball Central, which has a pretty solid fan base, they have Auburn right now as the 7th overall seed in the tournament.
Good for me.
That's not only hosting a regional, that's if Auburn advances, hosting a super regional.
For 2 years in a row at Plainsman Park.
With Auburn and Florida State, if it were to end right now.
A lot of games to be played, a lot of work to do for Butch Thompson and Auburn baseball. But Stephen Pearl and Auburn basketball have been getting to work as well in the transfer portal. Nice. Tons of updates today. That's what pros do. We'll talk about that to start hour number two.
The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is the Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on this Monday afternoon. And if you missed any of hour number one as we get started here in hour number two, you can always go back and listen to the podcast version of the show. We posted on our station website for you in the podcast center at ESPNAU.com. You can also check it out in the Radio Alabama app as well. In the first 60 minutes, we split it in half, talked Auburn football spring and A-Day in the first half, talked Auburn baseball and the win against Florida in the second half, talked about position takeaways for football, comments from Alex Golish and some of the players listeners as well. And then we gave our thoughts on Auburn baseball going to Florida, taking down the Gators, and how that impacts your record, impacts your resume, impacts your RPI, and what that means for Auburn coming down the stretch of SEC play. So all of that was in hour number one. Again, if you missed it, go and check out the podcast version of the show wherever you get your podcast, or on our station website at ESPNAU.com.
We hit the two major sports in hour number one. We head to the other one that has probably the most news here to start hour number two. We're talking Auburn basketball, as there's not only one but two new portal additions for the Auburn Tigers. There's also two portal news subtractions for the Auburn Tigers. One that we knew a little bit more about a couple of weeks ago. One that you're finding out about it today. We're talking all about that here in hour number two. Before we get to our guy Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network, who will be joining us on the phone lines as he does every single Monday at 3:30 to talk about all three of these major sports. My goodness, with A-Day, with Auburn baseball down in Gainesville, and with Auburn basketball as well. So we're excited that you're here with us for hour number two. Whether you're tuned in for the entire show or just now catching us on the way home, we're excited to be able to bring you here hour number two on ESPN 106.7. If you have thoughts on any of these conversations that we are about to dive into, feel free to give us a call at 334-321-1390. Anything on your mind with basketball, or if you weren't able to listen to the first hour and you don't want to yet, go check it out on the podcast center. We'll be free to dive back into that as well. The phone lines, again, 334-321-1390, or any quick hitters, any questions that you would like to ask. The text box is open, as it always is. Been very, very active today. And however we can interact with you, we love to do so. That number is 334-784-1067.
Yeah, transfer portal continues to be open for college basketball. Officially closes tomorrow for guys who want to enter their name into the portal. A reminder that you do not have to be committed somewhere by tomorrow. You just have to have your paperwork filled out and your name physically entered into the portal tomorrow. We're still seeing guys enter the transfer portal as of today. Yes, for Auburn, but across the SEC, across college basketball. I've seen several today across the G5, P5 level as well. Guys trying to make that last-minute decision and decide to enter the transfer portal.
How long until, or how many years do you think it'll take with football now, with eliminating the spring portal but still hearing all about the transfer portal and the basketball as well, that we will sound like those broadcasters that everybody yells at when you're looking at video review and it's like, okay, it has to be confirmed and conclusive evidence. Yeah. And everybody's sitting there like, we know it's happened for 8 years now. But
right.
We're at the point right now of, okay, in case anybody forgot, you do not have to find a home by this day. You just have to enter your name. Feels like we're at that point. Maybe we're now the ones being hated on for
maybe
that reason. But we helped inform one person today, and that's all that matters.
That's all that matters.
Thanks,
well,
Mom.
I'll tell you that there are names entering the transfer portal, and Auburn saw another one enter the transfer portal today. Sebastian Williams-Adams. This was a situation that we thought was finalized, we thought was cleared up, and then pretty much shortly after he announced his return to Auburn, there were rumblings that maybe this wasn't as solid as we thought. Maybe this was not signed, sealed, and delivered. Maybe it was just verbally signed, sealed, and delivered. And turns out that that was the case, because Sebastian Williams-Adams, who had an incredible freshman season on the plains for Stephen Pearl, he announced his intention to enter and his plans to enter on Instagram today. Sebastian Williams-Adams is in the transfer portal.
Yeah, and something that you mentioned, it was verbally agreed upon, and we have experienced a lot of that in the college sports world, of the gray area of what all of that entails, whether that is we've agreed on a new deal, we've agreed on signing, we've agreed on the extension, we've agreed on whatever. But man, this is going to continue to happen, not just with Auburn, but just with everybody. I mean, the entire drama of the Cal linebacker going to Clemson and then to Ole Miss after agreeing to a new deal, and Dabo coming out and basically confronting everybody, saying, you know what, fine, I'll be the spokesperson and go in and talk about all of this, and goes to show, obviously, another school is involved, or maybe it just goes to show that Auburn's offer wasn't as much as he was hoping to hear. But, man, until any of these contracts get worked out and they officially become official, and, man, anybody can either go out there and look at it, or there's official statements that teams give, this is going to frustratingly continue to happen. I mean, this even happened with guys that were formerly on the Auburn team. If one team fell through, and then you go and you reweigh your options. But this one hurts a little bit just from the Auburn perspective. And today you feel like almost gave the hints that we talked about this right before the show got started. And then he released it, did Sebastian Williams at us about 5 minutes later of entering the portal, that Auburn going and getting two big men, one that's going to be a primary forward, could be the center position if needed, and one's going to be one of those small forwards or an undersized four position, hinted at Sebastian Williams-Adams possibly making that announcement.
Yeah, and you've seen a lot of teams now making social media posts of, like, officially official or signed. Like, you see signed graphics from guys coming out of the portal, right? You'll see all the recruiting guys and all the college basketball, you know, the Joe Tiptons of the world make the break the news that so-and-so has committed somewhere. But now you've seen a lot of these major programs make an official post when pen has hit the paper. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that did not happen for Auburn. Sebastian Williams-Adams has announced that he will be entering the transfer portal. And so that one hurts for Auburn, no doubt about it. What also hurts, and don't worry, we're going to get to the good news in a moment, but what also hurts is a guy who had already announced he was entering the portal, who is making visits and taking visits and talking with other folks. Elijah Freeman has found a new home. He's going to stay kind of close to home, and he's going to play for Coach Miller in the Texas Longhorns. That's another one that Auburn has lost that has stayed in the SEC, another one that Auburn has lost that you will have to see at some point wearing a different colored jersey. And Texas has quickly become a legitimate threat next season in the SEC.
Yeah, we talked a lot about Sean Miller and how good of a coach he was. A lot of that depended on what Texas and their athletic department was able to give to Sean Miller. And I think that run to the Sweet 16 played a big-time factor of, oh, yeah, winning basketball and doing so in front of everybody is pretty fun. Mm-hmm. And I would be willing to say that Sean Miller probably agreed to some stuff before signing a deal, before putting his pen to paper this time about last year to become the new Texas head coach. And yeah, this one didn't necessarily hurt as much as it did seeing the entry, because you felt as if, again, we heard the numbers that him and his camp were offering or demanding, or not even asking for, because that's just the total asking price, and then it's to see if anybody matches it. But we heard that Texas Tech was in that sort of deal, and he was all but ready to sign or commit with them. That kind of fell through, and then it was almost the conversation of, okay, well, he's circling back to Auburn. Maybe that means that Auburn can be home again next year. And I think at that point, Auburn had either said the maybe, or it was just, sorry, we have guys that are visiting this weekend. They like where they're at. We are at where we like where they are at. And so because of that, yeah, yesterday morning, commits to the Horns. And a big-time talent in the SEC is Elijah Freeman. But going off maybe a little bit of a tangent, but we talked all about the potential for Sebastian Williams-Adams. We talked all about the potential for Elijah Freeman. Do you think, and this may be an unfair question just to throw to you all at one time, I was just thinking about this before we dove into the conversation, is Stephen Pearl at the point right now, after a frustrating year last year, where he can just, okay, let's try and develop these guys and hope that it works out? Or do you think he's taking a little bit more of the experienced route, which we have seen of, yeah, I don't have the patience, our fan base doesn't have the patience of, okay, let's give these guys another year or two to try and blossom into the players we think they can be, rather than let's go get guys, and obviously a lot of size, which we're going to dive into, but let's go get guys that have a little bit more polished. We know what their ceiling can be, and they're a little bit closer to it because we need success right now.
So basically asking, did Stephen Pearl and this staff, because again, you have a GM, you have Brian Clomen in there now, you've got all the assistant coaches who are very active. You're asking, did Auburn basketball trade experience? Did they trade potential for experience?
I think yes. And yeah,
I would say yes, they did.
I think I 100% agree. You are not at the point of the luxury of hoping for development rather than going and getting experience based off of how last year went, based off of the guys that you are returning, and based off of what was needed that you didn't have on your team last year.
Yeah, and that's a tough debate. I don't know.
And obviously this is just hypothetical, but
sure,
we're not sitting here asking this directly, but yeah.
On paper, yeah.
But if you had to willingly give up potential for what you know could come in and perform right now, I think it makes a big time conversation, and I think Auburn is in one of those weird situations where you can't go and you take the young guys. You got to go get the guys that you need that can help you win right now.
Well, with the two guys you bring in today, that would make a whole lot of sense. With watching Elijah Freeman and Sebastian Williams-Adams and Filip Jovic walk away, you have now brought in two experienced guys from the transfer portal, Thomas Dowd from Troy and Owen Freeman from Creighton, previously at Iowa, previous Big Ten Freshman of the Year at Iowa, Thomas Dowd, all-conference team at Troy. Yeah.
And a leading Sun Belt rebounder.
You bring in two guys who have size and experience to replace guys who had... You bring in two guys who have size, who have athleticism and experience to replace two guys who had size and athleticism.
And could be good enough to compete and win you big time games.
And if you really want to, again, I mentioned Filip Jovic as well. You could throw Ngoy in this situation. You could talk about the young man we talked about late last week as well, about four different guys with size and experience, whether it's college basketball experience. Of course, Ngoy was a professional in France, right?
You're talking Bucky Oboye.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Auburn went and brought four dudes in who have some sort of experience. Compared to, the young potential.
The hope.
Yeah. And I don't know if that was from a pressure standpoint for Stephen Pearl. I don't know if that was him and the staff. And again, Clomen may have had a big deal. And I think I know he had a hand and a big hand in what they did in the portal. We don't know what those direct conversations were. But it was like, hey, man, we got some ground to make up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, could this be good? Yes, but why don't we go get some guys that we know are good? Let's build this team differently than what you and your dad did the year before, because clearly it wasn't right, and let's see what we can do with a different style of roster.
Auburn's front court for this year, this upcoming year. We talked all about how size was a weakness for this Auburn team, and rebounding was a little bit of a weakness, and it was going to be, all right, you need four, if not all five, guys crashing the defensive boards to try and get rebounds, and how it might not be this one guy has eight, this one guy has 12, and the rest have one or two. You were at the point of KO needed rebounding games of 5 and 6. Tahad needed 5 rebounds. Elijah Freeman last year needed 8 or 9 rebounds. Auburn's front court for this upcoming year, Narcisse Ngoy is 7 foot. Bucky Oboye is 7'1". Amika Oporum is 7 foot, and Owen Freeman, who we are beginning to talk about, the Iowa/Creighton transfer, is 6'10". Thomas Dowd, who was the leading rebounder in the Sun Belt, 6'8".
Size is not an issue anymore. Not for Auburn anyway, because I think Stephen Pearl saw it, I think he heard it, and I think he realized this team was not built the way it needed to be built.
And I think that you can take a lot of credit or give a lot of credit to his best buddy from 2 years ago, the Florida Gators, and almost put that blueprint onto this Auburn team. Because, yes, Florida had every single big man that they wanted, and they have a lot of those guys returning, and they're most likely going to get another one in this transfer portal process. But what was it in March that won the national championship? It was Walter Clayton Jr.
Yeah.
It was all of those guards. What does Auburn have this year? You have Tahad Pettiford and Kevin Overton.
Returning guards.
Returning as your guards. Then you plug in those big men that can take a lot of the physicality. And now that you have multiple of them through SEC play and get it to the conversation of guard play, wins it in March. There's going to be a lot of people having a lot of conversations. If Auburn has success, of that being one of the best backcourts in the country, of Tahad Pettiford and Kevin Overton. Getting you to March and letting those guys be the primary factor, the primary focus, I think that's a little bit of the blueprint that this entire staff and Stephen Pearl decided to take this year.
Auburn fans are going to be upset watching guys like Sebastian Williams-Adams and Elijah Freeman and Filip Jovich, who will all end up on P5 rosters. Two of them already have. Sebastian Williams-Adams absolutely will. They will be upset watching those guys go ball out at their respective programs. But this seems like the smarter move for Auburn, and I think fans should buy in and invest in what Auburn has done in the portal so far, including Thomas Dowd from Troy and Owen Freeman from Iowa/Creighton. And we want to talk about those guys next.
It goes right into the question that I asked to start the segment of you're trading potential for experience. It feels like you're trading a little bit of a higher reward for a heck of a lot less risk.
I think you're going for a win now.
And that's what you are trading the higher potential ceiling for experience and for a lower risk that can get you wins in this day and age right now.
Let's talk about the two guys that Auburn brought in today through the transfer portal, Thomas Dowd and Owen Freeman, why Auburn got them, how they'll fit in the system, and what Auburn could do next. We'll talk about that right after this. Hour number two is underway here on the Monday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we continue on talking Auburn basketball in the transfer portal. Big day for Stephen Pearl and the Tigers. Yes, Elijah Freeman committed to Texas over the weekend. Yes, Sebastian Williams-Adams announced the news that he's entering the transfer portal, but there was a reason for that. Auburn went and got two commitments out of the transfer portal today. We'll go in order. We'll start with Owen Freeman, the 6'10", 240-pound junior, about to be senior in the transfer portal. He played this past season at Creighton. He is somebody who has been in and out of the lineup, okay, had some injuries, had a knee injury that he received in a pickup game last summer, which that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
But Owen Freeman, when he was at Iowa, okay, his first 2 years, he was Big Ten Freshman of the Year.
Yeah.
Back in 23 and 24. This is a guy that has averaged 10 points a game, 17 points a game, and then this past season was 5 points a game. But 6'10", 240, again, he is a rebounding guy. He's an inside scoring threat and someone who can play pretty legitimate defense on other bigs inside the lane. He was the first one that Auburn picked up today out of the transfer portal.
Yeah, you mentioned that freshman year, average 10.5, 6.5, and almost 2 blocks per game. This isn't somebody that is necessarily prioritizing stretching the floor for the Auburn Tigers, going to be much more of an inside presence. We've watched a little bit of highlights, not necessarily the quickest dude and not on the perimeter as well, but we mentioned the rim protector, the paint clogging presence that mm-hmm. Auburn has needed. This can be another one of those guys, and again, feels like one of those rebounding magnets that if Auburn can find a way to, I guess, not only keep him healthy, but for Freeman to remain healthy, it feels like this is a very big, and if we talk about the risk of the other side of things, this one feels a little bit higher of a risk just based off of the injury. You don't even want to say injury prone, because again, it was his knee and his finger a couple of times, or a broken finger, and so you feel like there is excitement on that side of things. I think a lot of people were dampened by what he did at Creighton, battling through injury and not keeping up those stats that he was expecting.
Yeah, and again, I agree that the Creighton film isn't over the top. impressive, but I think Auburn sees the size. I think they see what he was. They just see the inside threat as a scoring ability. Somebody who has the footwork on the low block. He doesn't move the best, in my opinion, just watching him on film, but I think you're using him more as a physical bully his way through rather than the tall and a little bit skinnier type of guys that you already have now on the roster.
Rather than the other one that you got that is going to be a little bit more of that stretch three, stretch four kind of guy that does have the rebounding ability, but you trust him a lot more on the perimeter and putting the ball on the floor.
Thomas Dowd from Troy, who committed today, 6'8", 225, is athletic. This dude, you wouldn't know it by looking at him, but when he gets on the floor, just the way that he's built, the way that he gets up and down the floor. I mean, just a guy that when he steps on the floor, just turns it on. And any shot that goes up, here comes Thomas Dowd just flying through the lane. He's got putback dunks. He's got high-soaring defensive rebounds. Somebody who averaged 14 points and 10 rebounds a season ago at Troy. Shot 44% from the floor. He's about a 30% career three-point shooter. So has the ability, not his strength, but has the ability to do it. Pretty good shot in a high shot release as well, and someone who I just think is going to be very difficult to keep off the floor for Auburn, and there's a high chance that he's a starter for this Auburn team.
Yeah, you mentioned it, 6'8", he was the 17th ranked power forward in the transfer portal and averaged a double-double, 14.5 points, 10.1 rebounds a game. Again, at 6'8", was the leading rebounder in the Sun Belt, and not only was he that, but he was probably the guy, if not one of the two guys, that led this Troy team to back-to-back tournament appearances.
Yeah.
You are bringing back tournament experience with a couple of these guys, but you're bringing in a guy who has the it factor on, okay, I'm somebody that this team can go to when a bucket is needed, and I have experience in the portal, tournament experience entering the portal that helps this Auburn team tremendously.
Had 23 points and 13 rebounds in the Sun Belt Championship game and their win against Georgia Southern. Now, his numbers were not impressive against Nebraska in the NCAA tournament, but that's because they got blitzed by Nebraska.
Yeah.
But Thomas Dowd's a very good basketball player. So is Owen Freeman. And there's a lot of hype and a lot of positivity around Auburn basketball, as is with baseball and football as well. We'll talk to Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network about all of the news going on, including a new SEC champion on campus as well. Jacob Hillman from the Auburn Sports Network joins us next.
Halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins, and joining us on the phone lines, as he does every Monday at 3:30, is our good buddy Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. Hillman, it's a gorgeous day in Auburn. It's a busy day in Auburn, and this weekend was no different, man. We are going to hit on maybe every sport that Auburn offers this today in our interview. I mean, there's just so much to talk about, and I hope everything is good in your world, my friend.
It absolutely is, and you're exactly right. There's so much to happen this weekend, and even at the end of last week to cover. It's hard to cover it all, but we're going to try and do that right here.
Well, let's go ahead and let's start with A-Day, because Auburn football wraps up the spring. They had A-Day on Saturday. It was a gorgeous day. There were a lot of people there, and got to see a little bit of everything at Jordan-Hare on Saturday afternoon between Byron Brown and the quarterbacks, and got to see the defense flying around, and also McPherson looking good as well. I mean, your takeaways from spring and, of course, from A-Day on Saturday for Auburn football.
Yeah, again, just it's awesome that A-Day and these spring games are starting to look more traditional than they have over the past few years, where there's actually it's game action. These two the offense and the defense going at each other and playing. And of course, you can figure out different ways to do it across the board. And I know Coach Coley's talked about the point system. They didn't pay much attention to it. They were treating it as a regular practice as far as that goes. But it was still cool to get out there and see the ones versus ones on offense and defense, and even the backups and some of the young guys get a lot of action in as well. And then, of course, the exciting newcomers like Byron Brown, Keyshawn Singleton, and then you have returners like Xavier Atkins on the defensive side that we're so excited to see. Jared Smith comes away with a huge interception. So really just so much to be impressed with, including the crowd that was out there on a gorgeous Saturday in April. And I'm really, really excited to see how this develops going into the fall because, again, obviously, when you look at the numbers and things like that, it's not exactly the prettiest stat line or anything for Byron Brown or anyone like that. But you want to see that develop. And, of course, he wasn't live during the game. Big part of his game is running the football. So we didn't get to see that really all that well on Saturday. So it was just a little glimpse at what's to come in September and beyond.
I mean, if you listen to the people on the internet, Jacob, it's time to panic. I mean, the quarterbacks had a couple of interceptions, and I mean, defense gave up 63 points or something. I mean, we should panic coming out of spring, right?
Well, that's the thing. Another thing, you know, Coach Golas mentioned the scoring system. He wasn't paying too much attention to that because, you know, and it got a little crazy towards the end with the way the points were going. But, oh, yeah, again, here's the thing. The defense was vanilla, and Coach Golas said as much because they just didn't want to do too much on this last practice and whatnot to put on display from Coach Durkin's defense. And that led to some big plays for the Auburn offense, but still the defense came away with some big plays. And again, that's part of the spring game. While the defense had a great play, then you can flip it to the other side. Well, that's not a great play for the offense. But I mean, you look at the Jared Smith interception. That was just a man making a big play at a big moment. And then I'll go as far as to say, look, Tristan Tia, the redshirt freshman from Oregon State, he looked pretty awesome outside of one pass in that game. And Deshaun Spencer looked awesome. Duke Smith got him a touchdown. And Mekhi Davenport scored his first touchdown as an Auburn Tiger, unofficially, obviously. So it was really good to see a lot of guys kind of get into the action and show what they were made of.
Well, A-Day is now done. The spring is now done for Auburn football. And Alex Golas mentioned on Saturday in the post-game interview and press conferences, they're excited to get back out on the road and start recruiting some more. Of course, summer workouts will happen, and then fall practice will be here before we know it. We're talking to Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network here on ESPN 106.7. Let's continue to churn through. Let's flip to basketball, my friend, where Stephen Pearl and the Tigers pick up another big man in the portal, this time the Creighton transfer, who was originally at Iowa, Big Ten Freshman of the Year there, coming out of the Big East now, and Auburn's got another big forward on the roster for next season.
Yeah, this is clearly a statement made by this coaching staff, Coach Pearl and General Manager Brian Kloman, that they are going to have size in this upcoming season, in the front court, wherever it is. And it's going to be something that Auburn has always had in the past. And it's kind of interesting. You look at the historical data, and in Bruce Pearl's tenure, there weren't very many seven-footers. You had a lot of 6'11 guys.
Right.
That included like Dylan Cardwell. Jani Broome was a tall 6'10 and different things like that. But you haven't had the true seven-footers like Auburn is going to have in Narcisse Ngoy and in Buke Oboye. And then you had Owen Freeman, who's going to be a tall four-man for Auburn next season. And those are the kinds of things that this staff, I think, throughout last year realized, okay, we were a little undersized when it came to playing against some of the best in the SEC. Of course, it worked out against some of them, like going to Florida and facing that front court and winning that game. It worked out, but it just wasn't consistent throughout the season, and that's something that this coaching staff really wanted to hone in on and focus. And now you're looking ahead. All right, what else is there to grab in the portal? Of course, it closes tomorrow, and from there you'll see more and more commitments fly in. You'll probably want to see the wing spot secured over the next week or so, and then maybe one more combo guard that can play behind Taha Pettiford and Kevin Overton as well. So that's kind of where it stands as far as the Auburn basketball portal hall goes. And like I said, it's so exciting to see. You get a little bit of different flair and that front court with Owen Freeman coming over from the Big East and the Big Ten. Of course, he didn't get to play last year, suffered an injury over the summer. And then you go to the international ranks with Narcisse Ngoi, and then in the mid-major ranks with Buke Oboye.
Well, Auburn loses a Freeman. They add a Freeman in the transfer portal over the last several days. Hillman, how would you, I guess, grade the Auburn roster, the Auburn basketball roster, as of right now from the Ngoi signing, the professional from France, the guys that are returning? You have a high schooler coming in as well with Caleb Williams, and then the couple of guys that Auburn has added through the portal. In terms of build and makeup and maybe in fluidity as well, how would you grade the Auburn basketball roster as it stands today?
Yeah, I'll stick to the front court just because you've got to kind of give it an incomplete right now with the back court. Obviously, there's still some depth pieces and then really the entire wing position that you've got to build out. But as far as that front court goes, I mean, it's hard not to be excited. And I mean, I think that this coaching staff really focused in on that as soon as the season ended, that is where the improvement needed to come from, is in that front court area, because you saw what Tahad Pettiford and Kevin Overton did over the back half of the season and in big moments and in big games. We know what they're capable of and that they're going to be the leaders on this team next year. So how can you really complement those two guys, and doing that in the front court is going to be the best possible way, getting some big rebounders as well as some serious interior presence that is going to protect the rim, and also just grab a lot of rebounds. And that's what this group of front court players is going to do.
Auburn basketball will be active in the portal a little bit longer. Hillman, you mentioned it closes tomorrow. Technically, that does not mean that everybody has to be committed by then. You just have to have your name and your paperwork in the system for the transfer portal. Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network with us here during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Let's keep it rolling, my friend. Let's talk some Auburn baseball. What a blessing it is to have this time of year right now to talk all three major sports. And we get to talk Auburn baseball on a victory Monday. What a series. Series win for Butch Thompson and the Tigers this weekend in Gainesville. They take two out of three. They're right back on track in the SEC. A gritty performance by Butch Thompson and the Tigers in Gainesville this weekend.
It truly was, and that was a series that, again, it's not one of those things that you must have, but if you're going to contend with the top of the SEC, and Coach Thompson talked quite a bit about how important it is to separate from the middle of the pack, because there were a ton of teams going into this past weekend that were 8-7 or 7-8. That was a majority of the SEC. So to beat a team that had one more win than you did, Florida was 9-6 coming into the weekend, to tie them in the standings and get the tiebreaker over them is a huge step forward in that goal before you face an absolute gauntlet the rest of the way with two big home series and then two huge road series as well that are on the horizon. And I think it goes back to last week's midweek against Alabama State. No, not the most high profile opponent or the toughest matchup, but Coach Thompson said it in the post game after that one about how winning that game the way that they did, it just seems like they did just about everything right, where you had a perfect game going into that seventh inning. Of course, the seventh inning was the last inning with a run rule, and you missed it just on one hit down the left side that, it is what it is. You're up 13-0. So the pitching was there. It was consistent throughout the entire game. And then the hitting starts to come along where guys are getting on base and letting some of the big hitters hit home runs. And that was such a cool thing to see on that midweek game after, all right, there's been some turbulence, but they made it through it and we're good to go. Ready into this weekend where the pitching stayed consistent. And then the hitters came up in huge moments, and that was the key. Like Bub Terrell's game-tying home run in Game 3, and obviously he's been moved around in the lineup. So it was just awesome to see him come through when it mattered most.
And Auburn now, again, in position. You said it well. You didn't have to have that win, right? But it felt so good to get it. Now you've got the midweek on the road this week, and then you come back home for Oklahoma, which will be a series that is competitive. But Auburn, I think, Hillman, will be in the mindset of win this series and possibly get the sweep. I know it's so tough to do that in the SEC, obviously, yeah. But if you get the series win, you go back out on the road. I mean, Auburn has put themselves in position to be in a really good spot for the SEC tournament, possibly hosting a regional. The RPI is through the roof right now, and that obviously puts you in position to host a super if you're lucky enough to get that far.
Well, that's the key, is that RPI number and just being out there. The strength of schedule is going to be what it is at the end of the year. It's going to be as high as as many teams are playing an SEC schedule and some of the non-conference matchups that the Tigers have faced off this year. So it's really critical for hosting purposes to be in that spot and be as high up in the SEC standings. Last year, hosting that first super regional ever, it was recognized by this staff how important it is to be in that position. And right now at 10-8 in the SEC, Auburn is just kind of on the outside looking in for a top four spot. It's technically tied for fourth right now with Mississippi State, Ole Miss, and Oklahoma and Florida, obviously with the tiebreaker over Florida. And you're going to get a chance at Mississippi State in a home against Oklahoma to try and steal some games from them. So just continuing to grind through what is a grueling schedule is going to be critical, and it's going to prepare you for the NCAA tournament and those regional and super regional weekends and hopefully into Omaha at the College World Series.
Well, Auburn baseball having fun right now. Auburn basketball busy in the portal. Auburn football wrapping up the spring. We're talking all those things and more with our guy Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network on the phone lines with us here on ESPN 106.7. And while the three major sports have been busy, so have the other sports too, Jacob. It's been a fun weekend for several sports here on the Plains, or maybe teams from the Plains but out in other places, right?
Absolutely. Auburn women's tennis, what a season it's been. For the Tigers, Jordan Szabo getting the SEC championship and just, again, a regular season championship and a tournament championship is a huge deal for this program. First time ever doing that. And that's all due to his leadership and this team that stuck together over the past couple of years. And they get it done against LSU yesterday in Norman, Oklahoma. They're actually headed back and will be back in Auburn today and just looking forward to celebrating with them and winning that SEC and looking ahead to the NCAA tournament where they'll have a chance to host. So have plans to be out at the Yarborough Tennis Center over the next few weeks when the women's tennis team is hosting. And then, hey, I'm going to give a shout out to Auburn softball as well, because for them to go steal a win at Florida, it's been a tough couple of weeks. And co-head coach Kate Malvo talked to Britt Bowen last week on This Week in Auburn Softball about looking within themselves. She thinks, you know, maybe we're focused a little too much on the opponent, and now it's time we need to look within themselves. And they certainly did that this weekend, stealing the game from the Gators. And now you're in a position where it's Ole Miss. They're part of the schedule are these last two weekends against LSU and Ole Miss. It's been tough skating from the past few weeks, but now it's time to capitalize and put yourself in position for the SEC tournament where anything could happen. You've got to make a run there to play in the postseason.
Well, again, it's an exciting time on the Plains right now. The Auburn Sports Network has got you covered with games on the year, covering things, podcast as well. And just for the listener's sake, everything in terms of on the air for us will be over on Wings 94.3 for Auburn baseball. Football obviously done with A-Day, basketball done, and no more Tiger Talk, right? That's over for the season.
That's correct.
So, Hillman, plug it all. Tell the people what they need to know on the way out in terms of radio broadcast over the next week.
Yeah, I'll say the biggest thing right now is you know, on Friday they announced Jordan Herrod North, the project that will help build out the north end zone as well as connect campus to Jordan Herrod Stadium with Petrie Hall and everything that goes into that. AuburnTigers.com/EverAuburn is going to be a good resource to learn about that and see how this is going to really help Auburn in the largest capital project ever. That's, like I said, going to connect campus to Jordan-Hare Stadium. Also, the Talking Tigers podcast with Andy Burcham. AD John Cohen is on it today talking about that project and what it's going to mean for the Auburn athletics side and tying it in as well. So looking ahead this week, women's golf is at the SEC championship. And then Auburn baseball visits Samford tomorrow at the Hoover Met. So that's a little prep for the SEC baseball tournament coming up next month. Airtime at 5:45 on Wings 94.3 FM with a 6 o'clock first pitch. And then men's golf, top ranked in the country, gets this SEC championship underway at Seaside Golf Club in St. Simons Island, Georgia. Softball's at Troy on Wednesday at 5:45 with a 6 o'clock first pitch. Britt Bowen on the call on Weagle 91.1 FM. And then this weekend, Auburn hosting Oklahoma at Blaineson Park Friday through Sunday with game time set for 6:00, 6:00, and 2:00 Central. So, so much going on this week. All those games will be on Wings 94.3 FM over at Blaineson Park, but it's going to be an exciting weekend over at the ballpark as well.
Hillman, always appreciate the time, my friend. Tons of information, tons of stuff going on. We always look forward to our Monday afternoon conversations. We'll do it again this time at next week.
That's right. We'll talk then and hopefully talk about another Auburn baseball series win. And then, yeah, make sure you follow us at AU Sports Network for all those broadcast details, highlights, and more as we move throughout the week. We'll talk next week, Jacob. War Eagle.
That's Jacob Hillman from the Auburn Sports Network. He's with us every single Monday, 3:30 during On the Line right here on ESPN 106.7. We'll take a break, come back, and wrap up the Monday edition of On the Line right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Shout out to Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network joining us on the phone lines as he does every single Monday at 3:30. And, you know, we got to recap with him a bunch of stuff that's going on around Auburn Athletics, and that's what today's show has been. We hit all three major sports. Took about 30 minutes per sport, football in A-Day, baseball in the series win against Florida, and basketball in the transfer portal news with two additions, one subtraction, also another player who left Auburn, committed somewhere else. And so, been a very busy show today, and if you missed any of it, you can always go back and listen to the podcast version of the show on our station website at ESPNAU.com. Christian has dipped out just a couple of minutes early. He's heading over to Lee Scott Academy, where the Warriors on the baseball diamond have senior day coming up, 5 o'clock first pitch on Tiger Country 104.5. They'll get you set over there with Christian Griffin on the Lee Scott Sports Network as they, again, celebrate their seniors against Wetumpka, and then they get prepared for the first round of the playoffs, which will be on Friday. If game Saturday, Lee Scott will head to St. James. That's just on the other side of Montgomery. They'll have that for you. Doubleheader Friday in the if game on Saturday in the first round of the 3A playoffs. 1A through 6A in high school baseball here in the state begins their playoffs this season. 7A for myself and Auburn High. We've got one more week of area play, and then we'll pick up and start our postseason next week. And so he's got baseball tonight. Then I have baseball Wednesday for Auburn High against Smith Station. That's at home. Doubleheader Thursday on the road at Smith Station. Then he has baseball on Friday, and then the if game on Saturday. We have Auburn University baseball tomorrow. That's on Wings 94.3. Then the weekend series against Oklahoma inside of Plainsman Park. Those are on Wings 94.3 as well. So a very busy week of broadcast and things on our family or radio stations. Download the Radio Alabama app, okay? That's the best way to listen to everything that we have going on, from shows here on ESPN to baseball games on three different stations, including tonight Lee Scott Baseball for Senior Night. Go hang out with Christian Griffin on this Monday evening on Tiger Country 104.5. We are back tomorrow to talk a whole lot more updates. We'll dive deeper into Auburn baseball and the numbers from this past weekend, plus more transfer portal stuff for Auburn basketball and more position breakdowns for Auburn football as well. That's 2-4 right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.